We're going to start in Genesis 16. You're going to be getting your Bibles ready for that passage, Genesis 16. Glad you're here. Never know what happened on a holiday weekend. We do have some out of town. We do have some on vacations and traveling, but we have many who are here for that very same reason. Other people are here visiting with us. We're really, really glad you're here. Invite you to come back any chance that you have. There are friends here from various ones of us, family members from various ones, and we're certainly glad you're here. There may be some from the community. We'd ask you to come back and visit with us anytime you might have opportunity. We'll meet Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. We'll have Bible classes arranged, and you might be able to come be a part of that study. Remember, a couple of weeks from now, Jordan Shouse will be with us. Jordan was here about 4 or 5 years ago or so, and one of those, it doesn't happen very often, but it was one of those where as soon as that meeting was over, several people just, we got to get him back. And it took, so we scheduled it out again, and Jordan will be back with us, and I know you're looking forward to that. Remember, we'll have our time change. We'll have our Sunday afternoon singing. We've got a meal list back in the foyer for those who'd like to have Jordan. It will just be Jordan. His wife and kids aren't going to get to come. I've forgotten exactly all the details. Where Jordan is worshiping at and preaching at, they're having a meeting like either the week after or anyway. It's something that's close. So they're having to stay behind and take care of some things with that. But Jordan will be here and he's excited about it. And I know that we are as well. In Genesis 16, just read a couple of verses. We're not going to talk today about Abraham and his family, but you remember the setting. There was a promise made to him back in Genesis 12 that he was going to have a child. And there was going to be incredible blessings that was going to come through that. And years have passed. And ages have continued. Just they're older. Nothing seemed to happen. And in verse 1 of chapter 16, now Sarai, Abram's wife, bore him no children. She had a handmaid, an Egyptian whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, "Behold, now the Lord has restrained me from bearing. I pray you, go into my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her." And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai. It's not like they doubt God's promises. But they are now thinking for themselves. And basically the mindset is, okay, God promised there would be a seed, that we're going to have children, but maybe that's not going to be through me. So take my handmaid. That can be how we have children. And you know what happened with that. That does end up happening. And then God later comes on and says, you know, I don't need your help. I'll take care of this in my time. It will not be through a handmaid. It will be through Sarah. And we know how that played out. But this just kind of gets to the heart of how badly they want a child. They start coming up with ways themselves that they can have a child. Look in Luke chapter 1. Look in Luke 1. You remember the setting? There's a priest named Zacharias who is doing his work. He's in the holy place, tending to the lamps, checking on the showbread. He's doing what priests did. We find out a little bit about him and his background. Look, pick up with me in verse 5, after the introduction. Verse 5, "There was in the days of Herod, the king of Judea, a certain priest named Zacharias of the course of Abiah, and his wife was of the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. They were both righteous before God." How would you like that to be said of you and your wife? "They were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord, blameless." How would you like that to be a description of you? Verse 7, "And they had no child. Elizabeth was barren. They were both now well stricken in years." These are righteous people, godly people, faithful people. They have for years, not exaggeration to say decades, they have wanted a child, and it just wasn't in the cards for them. Elizabeth's barren, and so even when she was young, she couldn't have children. Well, now she's old, and they have just conceded, it seems to be. And then one day, Zacharias is doing what priests did. He's in the temple, and he's doing the works. And in verse 11, there appeared unto him an angel of the Lord standing on the right side of the altar of incense. And when Zechariah saw him, he was troubled and fear fell upon him. Well, I would say so. That would scare all of us, I think. He's in there and he's working and he's doing the things that priests did. And he looks up and they're standing in front of the veil. They're standing right by the table of incense is this angel. That would have been an attention getter of all attention getters. And he's afraid. And then the angel speaks. Here's what he said. Verse 13, the angel of the Lord said unto him, do not fear, Zacharias, for your prayer is heard. And your wife Elizabeth shall bear you a son. You'll call his name John. We know the rest of the story. But how often and how easy is it to read through that phrase, your prayer is heard? You know what that means? Through all those years of barrenness, through all those years of not being able to conceive a child, they had been praying about that very thing. Like Abraham and Sarah, they wanted a child, and they wanted a child very, very badly. And the first thing the angel says is, I know you've been praying about this. I just want you to know God's heard that prayer. And that prayer is going to be answered in the positive. You will have a child. And then he goes on to tell him what that child's going to do. But just, you see these two examples of people desperately wanting a child. And there's many here who had that same desire. This room full of people who also wanted a child. Some blessed to have it, some not. But we understand the desire of it. But the question is necessary to ask, okay, now what? Maybe we prayed for a child as well. And maybe the Lord answered our prayer in the positive. Now what? Well, now what happens is we have to train that child. And that's what we're going to start looking at today. Before we even begin, I want to just pause and somewhat apologize. This lesson is going to be the launching point of others, Lord willing. If nothing gets in the way, we're going to get much more specific. Today's just kind of big ticket items. We're just going to kind of do a periphery glance at some things. And there's going to be a lot of things that I'm going to say that somebody's going to think, we need to go a little deeper into that. Yes, that's exactly right. And Lord willing, we'll get to them. So before we even begin, I just want to somewhat of apologize. Today is not going to be deep sea diving. Today's just going to kind of lay some groundwork for what we'll be doing in the next couple of weeks. We're just going to start looking at some specific things. But today is not specific at all. Today is going to be very, very general, very, very broad. But it's something we are all concerned about. Because like Abraham and Sarah, and like Elizabeth and Zechariah, many in this room wanted children, many blessed with children. And whether we were or not, there's still children in our lives. Whether it's as an aunt, it can be from many sorts. But there's people that we're concerned about, young people that we're concerned about. In Ephesians 6, we're familiar, we sing the song about the armor. Here's this symbolic phrasing of the outfit of the Roman time period. And it's given the impression that there's a war that's being fought. And that's exactly what it is. It's a spiritual war being fought. And there are people in this room on the front line of it. To use a familiar phrase, you are trying to raise faithful children in an unfaithful world. And that is a fight. You're fighting it. You're trying to teach your kids so they can in turn fight it. And that's where we are. And it's all of this is important to us, whether maybe raising children and training children is in our rearview mirror. And now all of a sudden grandkids come along and there's this issue will always be front and center to godly minded people. Because there's always going to be young people that we are concerned about and that we're worried about. And we're going to do that. We're going to spend some time in this next month or so looking at some of that. And again, today we're just going to look at four or five verses. We're not going to go all crazy deep into any of them. Today we're just going to kind of launch and get prepared for for much more specific things in the coming weeks. But worldly things creep into us as we're doing this, as we're trying to raise and train children. Worldly things happen. And whether sometimes we know it, sometimes we do not know it, but we get impacted by it. And sometimes even we are unaware of it, but worldly concepts come into our mind, worldly concepts come into our house, and we're raising our kids with almost worldly slants to it. So we're going to look at some of those things in the next month or so, but let's start by looking at the 127th Psalm. Look at the 127th Psalm. And let's just look at some verses that we're familiar with and just kind of look and make sure we don't get bogged down with worldly emphasis. 127th Psalm, just as we remind ourselves of the joy that Zacharias and Elizabeth would have had when that message came to them, the joy that Abraham and Sarah had, both of them shock that they had to overcome, it seems, but we ought to be familiar with that joy. 127th Psalm, look with me in verse 3. Lo, children, most of the translations, especially some of the older ones, it's going to say, lo, children are a heritage of the Lord. And that word heritage is going to be part of the same root of the word that we get our word inherit. The point is, it's something that goes on. It's something that just keeps giving. And the newer translations have actually used that as the basis of that. Lo, children are a gift of the Lord. And that might be more to the heart of what's being spoken there. A heritage. Something that just continues on and on and on. These blessings, the smiles, the joy, they just keep on going. The gifts that keep giving, we say sometimes, they are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is His reward. Arrows in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy, blessed is the man that has a quiver full of them. So let's make sure, first of all, that we don't get worldly thinking involved in the blessing that children are. They are a heritage. They are a blessing from God. And we are to be grateful for that. And I know that we are. But that is not always what the world thinks. Many times the world, children are a burden. And you know that that's, as hard as that is to sound and to say, they just kind of get in the way. They kind of just put a fly in the ointment, and it slows us down from what I really want to do. And I can't wait till they're gone so I can go back to doing what I want to do. We would never be that drastic, I don't think. But on bad days, when we're pulling our hair out, sometimes we might forget that they're a gift. We might forget that they're a heritage. So let's just be reminded of that. It's not an easy job. So let's come clean with that. But the worldly idea of just a burden, how contrary to God's will that is. They will test our patience both physically and emotionally. And the thing is, it kind of never ends. And what I mean by that is that there are the issues of the little one, with the diapers and the rashes and the crying, and you finally figure that out. Nobody knows how to do it when you take them home. You can read all the books. You can talk to whoever you want to. It doesn't matter when you get them home. You just figure things out. And the thing is, though, as you figure that part out, that's not what they're doing anymore. Now they're doing this. And you get that figured out. And so they go through these phases. You figure out how to do it as a toddler, and they're not a toddler anymore. And then you finally get this figured out, and now they're this. And that just keeps. So no, it's not easy. But it's not to be looked at as a burden either. It's a gift. They are heritage. And yet, too often people think they just kind of get in their way. They've hindered our life. They've hindered our lifestyle. You hear children called a lot of things. You know, a couple years ago, I never saw it. I just know the name of it. There was a cartoon called Rugrats. And all of a sudden I heard parents calling their kids that. Maybe it was a joke. Maybe it was... But when you just think about what that... I hope it was a joke. But to think that we would think of our kids in such a way. Maybe we get a little perturbed. And we're going to, here's one of the things that, again, we'll be much deeper in later on. Maybe they become a burden to us because they're so disruptive. They're so undisciplined. And now guess whose fault? Now they're a burden because we didn't do what we were supposed to do. And we'll be much deeper into that later on. So resentment can happen, and that resentment can become a wedge that will last for years, and it may last for all of the years. Babies come into this world absolutely helpless, and they are counting on loving, trusting parents to take care of them. And so we have to embrace that as a gift. And the sniffles and the diapers and all that kind of stuff, don't let that get us to worldly thinking. They are a heritage of the Lord. Don't forget that when the days get bad. Look at Ephesians 6. So again, we're looking at familiar passages today. We'll get more in application phase in just a moment. But let's just read some. They're familiar, but that doesn't mean we don't need to read them. Today's just an introduction, so let's introduce. Ephesians 6, verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. So we're talking more today about parents in the next couple of months or so. But children, this is you. You have a responsibility. Obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And guess who is it that defined what's right? God is the one who calls that right. Verse 2 goes back to the law. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. That's kind of interesting. If you're wondering what that phrase, the first commandment with promise. If you go back to Deuteronomy and read through the law, basically the law was just statements. You will not do this. You will not do this. You will do this. It was just a statement. Until you got to this one. And then there was this like an addendum. There was this extra statement. You do this because here's what can come from it. And it goes on into verse 3. Paul through the Spirit just quotes that for us. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. So he doesn't just say it was with an addendum, but then he gives them the addendum. But now, back to parents, verse 4. Your fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. The idea of bring them up. We would say it, raise them up. And it kind of sounds just like what you would think it is. Imagine if I was to pick this thing up and I raise it and bring it over here and set it there. That's the idea. I bring it from there to here. Bring them up. Raise them up. And this is where we're going. This is, bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Look in Proverbs 22, and we get to the word that these next couple weeks are going to be basing off of. Proverbs 22, verse 6. Proverbs 22, 6. Train up a child in the way that he should go. And we're going to emphasize these next couple of weeks the word train. It doesn't say dominate. It doesn't say manipulate. It doesn't even say tell. It says train. You know what's a lot easier when they're little? Dominate. Smash. You will do it. And training involves more than that. You know what's easier when they're little? Telling. But that is not what it says. And that's not what... Training is hard work. There's a lot that if we're failing at this with all the other good that we're doing, we're failing at one of the most important things that we can do.
It takes thought. It's going to be positive consequences, negative consequences. Positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement. There's a bunch of ways that it happens, but it has to happen. And it's not always the easiest way. There's a lot of easier ways to get kids to do things. But the wisdom from above is that there's going to be some training involved. And that there's skill to that. It takes a long time to be trained to do anything. What do you do? What do you do? What do people in your family do? Think about it. And now think about the training that it took. There are people in this room highly skilled in many ways. Electrically skilled, mechanically skilled. We've got woodworkers here. We've got a bunch of stuff here. Bunch of people who know what they're doing. You didn't know that when you were born. And you think about how long it took to get to where you are at the skill level that you are. So in trains of fields, just fields of training of jobs, to be good at something takes, that doesn't happen in one day. Think about something easy as we are just driving a car. When first starting out, and everything's herky jerky, slamming on brakes, and I don't know how many clutches Ty burned out. He went through a bunch, and it takes a while to be good, to be trained, and be good at driving. Think about the computer. We do so much on computer. You weren't born knowing that. Some know more than others. Some are trained better than others. But we could spend the rest of the day talking about it. We understand the concept. Everything that we do that we are good at, for the most part, we were taught it. And we had to work at it. And it took a while to get the swing of it. Our kids are not being trained to drive a car and to get a career. They're being trained about life. They're being trained how to live in this world. And that's going to take a while. You think it took a while to learn your skill? We're trying to train our kids how to live properly on God's creation. You think it took a long time to learn how to drive well and to work a clutch? We're trying to train our kids how to face a very manipulative, evil enemy. And that's going to take a while. It's going to take work. And to throw into the mix, we as parents trying to train them about life when we're still struggling with our own issues. We hadn't figured out life completely either. We've still got our own little problems that we're trying to work out and figure out. And kids are fun. And that's one of the blessings. But that's icing on the cake. The job is to train, not to entertain. Don't let Netflix raise your kids. And don't let Walt Disney movies raise your kids. And if that's the only way they can learn to sit and pay attention and behave and be still, what are we doing? We're teaching them how to live. And we've got to teach them, and that takes work and effort and focus. And there's a lot of things that can get in the way. So let's look at some of them. Again, generic, basic introduction stuff today. But indulgences can be a problem in our training. Turn to 1 Kings chapter 1. 1 Kings 1. The job is to train, not to satisfy every whim and desire. That is not the job. We love them. We want to give. That is not the job, to just make them happy about everything they want. The job is to train. Heard a man one time describe it that we put our kids on a throne as if they are a prince or a princess, and we just bow to their needs. Everything they want, everything they desire. That is not life. We're trying to train them how to live life. And having everything handed that they want is not life. And we know that. hardships are going to come. And if we haven't prepared them for that, they're going to hit a brick wall and they're not even going to know how to adapt to that. And it's our fault. 1 Kings chapter 1, here's an example that we know the rest of the story to. David had a son named Adonijah. Look in verse 5. Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, I will be king. Well, the problem was, that was not what God wanted. That was not the order of progression that God wanted to happen. Adonijah has for himself said, this is what I want, and this is what I'm going to do. He exalted himself. You know how that came about? Look in verse 6. His father, and that's talking about David, by the way, breaks my heart to have to read this, and I know it breaks your heart to have to see it. His father had not displeased him at any time by saying, why have you done this? David exalted him before Adonijah exalted himself. David let Adonijah run wild. He did whatever he wanted, and not one time. Do you think the Holy Spirit's exaggerating here? Just words for word's sake? Or can we take it at what it says? David never set him down and said, son, there's a better way. Why did you do this? What are you thinking? No, he did what he wanted, when he wanted, as long as he wanted. And then, shock of all shock, when he doesn't like what God has planned, he decides to do something about it on his own. Yeah, blows our mind, doesn't it? When we indulge them, they will not be any better than this. The day we set them and exalt them on a throne, they'll exalt themselves in time. We're training. Indulgences can be a problem in that. Shielding them can be a problem in that. The job is to train, not swoop in like an eagle and save them from all of their troubles. It's not to swoop down and save the day. There is a school I heard of that has banned homework. And the reason they did it is because what teachers were finding out is it was the parents that was doing the homework anyway. So worried about grades. So worried about honors and tassels. Parents doing the kids' homework for them. You're familiar. I don't know all the details. I've just peripherally read some of it. But there's apparently some people about to go to jail very soon. They have found parents all over the country, from Harvard all the way to colleges in California, where parents were bribing the ones who allow people to come to school. I forgot what the phrase is, but the ones that make the decision whether or not they are accepted or not, the acceptance boards of schools, were being bribed. And now that has become clear. Here's without the kids even knowing, apparently, here's parents bribing this person so their child can be in a certain elite place. And here's the parents doing all of these things. We love them. And because we love them, we want to kind of make everything smooth and make everything easy. The problem is life is not smooth and life is not easy. And our kids have to know that. And we're not doing them any service when we shield them from it. There are lessons to learn when you have to sit on the bench. So don't get mad at the coach when that's where your kid may find themselves. Don't swoop in like a nuclear bomb. There are lessons to learn if your kid makes a B because they didn't study like they ought to have. We want them to be mature and we want them to be independent, and that comes through training. And if we, by indulging, and if we, by shielding from consequences, all we're going to do is, at best, we're going to make them weak and fragile. At worst, we got full-blown narcissists on our hands. The job is to train. And if there are consequences that their actions find themselves in, then let them find themselves there. You can learn something from in-school suspension. You can learn something from Saturday school or whatever. Make your own applications. But we have to go from this little one who has to have everything done. We have to go from control to supervise them as they do things, as they learn things, as they begin to manipulate. And then it goes from observing. There's a point in time where the only influence we have on our kids is exactly that. It's just an influence. And we better have trained them by the time that day comes. So it's not about indulgence. It's not about shielding. It's not about putting life on hold. I don't exactly know how to phrase that. But we're training them how to live. And in that training them how to live, a part of that, forefront of that, has to be training them by God's principles. And here's where we can fail in our training. We put our life on hold because of them. And we basically, I'm just going to throw some scenarios out. We can't have Jordan Shouse at our home for hospitality in 2 weeks. We have kids. We can't go visit this shut-in. I've got kids. And so I'm hesitant to say we use them as an excuse. But we don't do things we know we need to be doing. Maybe excuse is not the right word. But they need to see how to live life. They're learning how to live life. And they're learning it from us. If we don't do those things, if they don't see us doing those things, do not be surprised when they don't do them. They never saw them. Shame on us. Kids do change the schedule. This is not talking ridiculous. Of course they change the schedule. But they need to see us doing what we need to be doing. Because we're trying to train. That can be a problem. Selfishness can be a problem. Look in Philippians 2. Philippians 2. This is not a verse in any form or fashion that is specified to parenting. It's not. It's just a verse that talks about relationships. It includes every relationship under the sun. Fundamental concept of how we deal with other people, which would include then our children. Philippians 2 verse 3. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, the old King James, is the idea of selfishness. In lowliness of mind, let others esteem others better than themselves. But the idea of just everything we do, let nothing be done through selfish ambition. And listen, sometimes selfishness can come into this. This verse applies to every relationship. It's fundamental to what Christ did. This is speaking of Christ, by the way. It's just the example that He set for us. But in this particular relationships that we're talking about today, Abraham and Sarah desired a kid. Zacharias and Elizabeth desired a child. Those of us in this room desire children. And I'm guessing. Don't want to speak for you. Guessing. Probably had some high expectations. Probably had some long-range plans. And you get these ideas of maybe what they're going to be and how they're going to be it and where they're going to live. And high expectations is one thing. A whole lot better than low expectations, huh? But that's a whole nother world from creating what we might could call a trophy. And so here's the hard exercise that we're about to do. Why did we want some of those things for our kids? Why did we want them to be good at sports? Why did we want them to learn the piano? Why did we want them to get really good grades? Why did we want them to... A lot of times we put our issues on our kids. And if this sounds like I know what I'm talking about, this is way close to home. We can put our issues on them. We put our desires on them. Let everything be done unselfishly. We may have some goals. We have whatever. But they are their own. And they're going to have different desires, and they're going to have different things, and they might like things completely different from us. Train them to be the best they can be at whatever those things are. The job is to train, not live selfishly through them, and to put our stuff on them. And sometimes we can do that. Kids are fulfilling, but that's not the job. That's not the pursuit. The pursuit is to train. So when we may think, that's not good enough for my kid, shame on us. Shame on me. They're unique. And so let's help them and train them to be as best they can at whatever those things are. Because the goal is not to be good at sports. The goal is not to be good at an instrument. The goal is not to be this and this and this. The goal is to go back to the one who gave them a soul. Children are a heritage from the Lord. They're a gift. He gave us a child. That child has a soul. And the biggest job we've got is to train them so that that soul goes back to them when they take their last breath, whenever that day comes. And so, with all these problems that we got to deal with, do we trust God's wisdom? Because here's what can get in the way. We in the raising of our kids, what we're more worried about, we're more worried about the world's view of that. We're more worried about Dr. Spock's view of that. We're more worried about what our friends' view of that. Maybe we're even more worried about what our own wisdom thinks about certain things. And what we want to do in these next few weeks, it's just a launching point. What we want to do in the next few weeks is just look at God's. He didn't just tell us to train them and drop that in our lap and say, okay, have at it. No, there are some skills. There are some things He gave us and examples that He gave us, good and bad, to help us along the way. So as we begin this study, that's what we'll be looking at next couple weeks. Get your songbooks out. We've talked generically in and around about children. The invitation is just simply, are you God's child? Are you one of His children? We're all His creation. Thanks be to God. The question is, am I His child? Am I His servant? Do I obey Him? There are people in this room, if you're not a Christian, I'll just ask a couple questions. Do you know who Jesus is? How do you know that? You didn't learn it in a science book. By faith. Do you believe He is who He said He was? Do you believe He did what Scripture tells us that He did? Do you believe your sins caused Him to have to die? And you believe that baptism washed those sins away? Because if you believe those things, you need to be acting. Those of us that are Christians, life gets in the way. And what we know and what we do aren't always the same thing. We can wear the mask that we talked about earlier today. We can put on the show for a while. We do some certain things and we have a certain look, but there's no genuineness to it. There's nothing real about it. God knows. He doesn't have to have a witness to testify about it. He knows. Fix it while we've got this opportunity, while we're still here. Do it while we stand and sing.